Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to the Brownstone on the Voices of Hope Radio Network, and I am your host, Tracy B. I will be rocking this mic with content that is empowering, inspiring, and transforming. So grab your favorite beverage, find your favorite chair, and join the conversation. And welcome to the Brownstone, y'all.
Being fly.
We stand up
against obstinate systemic racism,
fight for health care
and justice
for all our citizens,
and use our power,
our rights,
our responsibility.
Black women,
let's vote.
Vote, vote
for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
Your turn, fellas.
Okay.
Okay.
We got this.
Fellas.
Brothers.
We've heard our sisters,
our mothers, our wives and daughters cry out for equality.
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 All across this country. And now it's our turn.
Our responsibility to take our power back.
Black women vote more than black men.
And it's time we change that.
Don't give your power away.
Every single vote counts in this election.
Show up.
Show out.
And vote
for Joe Biden
and Kamala Harris.
Welcome to the Brownstone, y'all, and I am your host, the one and only Tracy T. That's me. And so tonight, you know that I'm going to be rocking it with content that's inspiring, transforming, guys, and just empowering. So tonight, before we get started, let me say this one thing. Your voice matters and your vote counts. So on November the 3rd, make sure you get out and vote so we can have a change in our United States. So I want to just jump into this right quickly right here and ask you this one question. Do you love to read? And if you do, I would like to take this opportunity to invite you to Sisters of Literature Book Club. It's an interactive club with a multi-platform reading group. Each month, we bring together passionate readers to review, discuss, and share experiences and inspiring stories. So this month we're reading All About Love by Bell Hooks. The word love is most often defined as a noun, but what if we used it as a verb? So join us as we read All About Love by Bell Hooks on our Facebook group, Sisters of Literature. Join the conversation on October the 25th at 6 p.m.
Starting a nonprofit is an exciting experience. It gives you an opportunity to turn your passion for giving and serving others into a reality. However, starting a nonprofit also comes with a lot of challenges. Many organizations fail before they launch by not knowing how to set up their organization correctly. Don't get frustrated trying to navigate through the IRS tax-exempt paperwork to start a nonprofit, register your charitable organization, or even if your status has been revoked. Let our professional staff do the work for you. We are helping nonprofits run like for-profits. Schedule your discovery call today by visiting our website at thenonprofitcoach.org or by calling 240-547-8780. Starting a nonprofit organization is an exciting experience. It gives you an opportunity to turn your passion for giving and serving others into a reality. However, starting a nonprofit also comes with a lot of challenges. Many organizations fail before they launch by not knowing how to set up their organization correctly. Don't get frustrated trying to navigate through the IRS tax exemption paperwork to start a nonprofit, register your charitable organization, or even if your status has been revoked. Let our professional staff do the work for you. We are helping nonprofits run like for-profits. Schedule your discovery call today by visiting our website at thenonprofitcoach.org or by calling 240-547-8780.
That's right. That's live radio, guys. This is how we do it. And welcome back to the Brownstone. And I am your host, Tracy Brown. Tonight, I would like to welcome W.B. Brown to the Brownstone. So, I mean, is he in the building? Mr. Brown, are you in the building?
All right.
All right, you are in the building. And you, hello, we hear you loud and clear. You are in the building, and welcome to the Brownstone. I hope you had the opportunity to look around just a little bit, and I don't know which one is your favorite room, but I know I probably can figure out which one. But, well, I'm going to go ahead and get started with the show. As always, I like to do a little bit of fun facts with my guests. And so tonight, you know, I've done my research, so tonight I want to talk to you a little bit about your acting career, how you love music, and being a retired Washington Metropolitan Police officer. So as we get started, you know, just sit back and relax with your beverage in your hands and just take a few minutes to just answer these questions for us. When did you discover that you wanted to be on the big screen?
probably at a young age. I think when I was going to the movies, I'm around 6 or 7, and seeing the people on the big screen. But the first thing that struck me as the movie would come on, there would be a big plaque, and it would say WB on there. And I would look at that, all these movies I go to, and I'd be like, WB, well, that is me. Of course, you know, it's still for Warner Brothers, but, you know, that yearning to be on the big screen and be the WB probably got me on my way.
Oh, wow. That's right, because it does pop up on the front of the screen. So instead of taking it for Warner Brothers, you took it for the WB, meaning that was you. So here's my second question. You know, as I stroll through your IMDb page, I hope that I said it right, I see that you started in the late 90s, but this is a question I have for you. Is it true that you appeared in a movie with Taraji P. Henson back in the day?
That's something we don't really talk about. But yeah, back in the day when I first started, and I think all of us first started, myself, Taraji P., I think Lance, we did a movie, the director's Bobby Brown, and it was called Good to Go, a DC movie. And, you know, they paid us beer and chicken and stuff and pizza. That was my first time ever, and it was her first time ever. And we just don't talk about that, you know, since they elevated their game and, you know, and so forth. But, yeah, that is true.
Wow. I guess now when you think about that, you say, wow, you know, I remember her when she first got started, her first movie that you guys don't talk about. But you have appeared in The Deep, The Shield, The Wire, Transformer, Below the Beltway, Nightmare Next Door, and a host of other shows and movies. But what one was your favorite role and why?
I think I have two. One was it was on the ID channel where I played a young guy by the name of Reggie Weeks. And he was a person out of North Carolina, a family man who basically raped and killed his daughter and made it look like a robbery. And the only reason I say I like that one because when that came out, I had people, even my own mother, calling me up, telling me, I cannot believe you did that. And you know, I can't, you know, and I'm telling them, hey, I'm only acting. That's not true. And I think the second one would be my close to my heart, The Wire, which was the fifth season. I was able to go on The Wire and stay the whole season.
All right. So what role did you play in The Wire? What role did you have?
I played a detective. Believe it or not, I went there and I was only supposed to be for two episodes, and they liked how I was looking, and I played a detective, and at that time I was a detective for the Metropolitan Police Department, so it was not like really acting, just something that's new to, you know. And basically they liked what they saw, they liked how I was vibing and stuff, and they said, hey, you want to stay up, you can do this for the whole season, which I did.
All right. So right now we're going to switch up gears to another love that you love. You are crazy about music. If I can say so, listening audience, that beat, that slick, smooth beat that comes on at the beginning of the show, that beat was actually done by none other than the WB. So we thank you for that. We salute our hats off to you for that. But I know music to be a part of your DNA. So tell us how did you get started? Who are some of your favorite artists?
Oh, okay. Well, I got started, I think it was around maybe like 15, 14. I was listening. I always loved listening to the radio. And I used to listen to like HUR, KYS, and PGC. And I used to take slow songs on the HUR with Melvin Lindsay. I used to make cassette tapes. I know people don't know what that is, or people, you know, make cassette tapes. And I used to make them and basically not sell them to people, but say, hey, people would like the music that I put together. And I did that for a while. And then I was able to go to Winston-Salem State and actually be introduced to the radio station and was able to play music that I wanted to play on the radio station. And music has always been a part of me. I think I can listen and I like to listen to it, hear it, vibe with it. And stuff. I also can hear when people like are out of note, out of sync, or it didn't sound too good or not clear and so forth. And let me see. That's been going on for a while now. I was also able to parlay that and get a job at HUR as an assistant producer for the late, great Patrick Ellis doing gospel. And from there, I am doing all types of Facebook Live, Instagram Live, doing music on certain nights where I hit them with an array of music, slow jams, hip hop, rap, jazz, R&B, and the rest.
All right. Well, we thank you for that. So listening audience, if you want to actually catch him, you can catch him at www.playdjtv.com/DJ the WB Live. And so he should be starting that up sometime soon, but I'm quite sure he'll let us know as we before we leave out. But this is the last segment before we move on to why you're really here tonight. But I first want to thank you for giving 25 years of police service to the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. Of course, we know when you're a police officer, even when you leave your job, you're never off duty. It's always a 24/7 job. So I wanted to ask you this simple question. What are your thoughts about what we are seeing in our community today about the men in blue or the police in blue?
Lady T, what I see today kind of it breaks my heart, because I mean, I wasn't taught the things I'm seeing. It can never happen. We can never do things like that in D.C. And it seems like the police that are doing that are like doing too much, and they're like shoot first, ask questions later. And it's like I look at the training, I look at how many years the people have on that's doing it, and then it comes to common sense. I mean, out there you have common sense, you learned about street sense, and then it's like, you know, you yourself, you know right from wrong. You know that if you you standing on somebody's neck or kneeling on somebody's neck and they're saying, I can't breathe, you know, common sense would say, well, get off his neck and everything. I mean, you know, the stuff, you know, and the shoot first and the Breonna Taylor stuff, you know, go in the door and you start busting rounds and stuff like that for you. I mean, you know, where's the threat? I just, you know, the things I'm seeing now, it's sad, because it's like I just don't know where this training is coming from, or what are they doing, or what kind of mindset they are. But it's not good. It's not a good look for the police.
Well, we thank you for that. But we know that it has to do a lot with training, a lot with, you know, a lot of times I find that our police officers are trained differently in different segments of parts of our country. So I thank you for your years of service, but we're getting ready to go to a quick commercial break, and you're listening to the Brownstone on the Voices of Hope Radio Network, and we'll be right back after a few commercials.
Starting a nonprofit is an exciting experience. It gives you an opportunity to turn your passion for giving and serving others into a reality. However, starting a nonprofit also comes with a lot of challenges. Many organizations fail before they launch by not knowing how to set up their organization correctly. Don't get frustrated trying to navigate through the IRS tax-exempt paperwork to start a nonprofit, register your charitable organization, or even if your status has been revoked. Let our professional staff do the work for you. We are helping nonprofits run like for-profits. Schedule your discovery call today by visiting our website at thenonprofitcoach.org or by calling 240-547-8780. Starting a nonprofit organization is an exciting experience. It gives you an...
I thought some time alone was what we really needed. You said this time would hurt more than it helped, but I couldn't see that. I thought it was the end of a beautiful story, and so I left the one I love at home to be alone. And I tried and found out this one thing, it's true, that I'm nothing without you. I know better now, and I've had a change of heart. I'd rather have bad times with you.
Welcome back to the Brownstone, and you know, this is the part of the show that I really love because we're about to introduce a new segment, and that segment is simply called Love, Marriage, and All in Between. And so tonight, you know, I have the pleasure of being in the studio audience with my boo thing, guys, and that just is really so interesting for me because that song that we played, I've learned how much he really meant for me as we went through a challenging period in our marriage. But let's welcome back again the one and only my boo thing, W.B. Brown. Are you still in the studio?
Yes, ma'am. I'm up here in the game room down in the Brownstone having a little fun in the game room.
All right. Well, I thank you for joining me on Love, Marriage, and All in Between. This is a time where we're going to have a candid discussion about relationships. So if you have our young people listening, I think this is a time that they need to exit the room. Like the old folks say, grown folks are talking, so they need to exit the room. Welcome back again, W.B. Brown, and I hope that you are enjoying the game room. But I'm simply going to ask you some questions tonight, and I braced myself for your answers. But this segment is going to be about, you know, we're going to talk about relationships, blended families, you know, cooking, marriage, all those things that happen in a relationship, which are simply just life. But tonight is going to be just some few questions that I would appreciate if you answered honestly, because I'm going to do the same. So the first question happens to be, how am I doing as a wife in general?
Let me stop playing. You're doing an excellent job, outstanding job. So far, so good. You know, we're doing what we do and everything. Try to get that love thing every day working.
Well, I thank you for that answer. I know, guys, he really probably wanted to say something else. But I can say myself, I am a piece of work. And he has changed me. He has loved me unconditionally. You know, marriage is tough and it's hard, and you hit those slumps and those bumps, and he's one of those individuals that that keeps me focused, that keeps me grounded, that tell me, you know, how it is, you know, as a husband, he tells me how it is. So how you are doing as a husband.
Let me close my ears on this one.
But the truth is, when I married my husband, you know, when you're the only child or maybe the only male child, I can say that he's a little spoiled. He says that he's not, but he's a little spoiled, and maybe I have spoiled him too. But, you know, a lot of times when you're spoiled, you want your things to be your things. And so the biggest thing that I want to compliment him about is that he has learned to share. And that's a big thing around here, guys. You really don't know how big it is, but it's a big thing. So he, you know, some of his toys are still some of his toys, but he has learned to share. So I, you know, just want to commend him for that, because when you're used to your things just being your things, and then you get a wife, and not only a wife, you get some kids that come along with it, then, you know, making that separation and sharing your space and your things can be very challenging. So that was question number one. Question number two is if you could change two things about me, what would it be?
Let me see. If I could change two things about you. I don't know. Let me see here. Two things I could change. I'm going to think about that. Wait a minute. Two things I could change. Probably. I know, ladies and gentlemen. My wife has a sharp tongue. And when I say sharp, I mean she thinks she's on the Def Jam comedy show, and she likes to Joan, as we call it, cut on people. She thinks she's Kevin Hart's little sister or something. And I tell you, she just does this like you wouldn't believe. You say this, she says that. And then you have to look at it like, well, wow, that's how you really feel? But it's all in jest, it's all in play. So if I would change the dulling of the tongue or to take it on out, because I mean, a girl like the Joan, I'm about to put her on my show and let her do entry and do monologues and jokes. She's really funny. That's one thing. Let me see. The other thing I would change. You know what? I probably wouldn't change anything else. That mouth, I would just say it. I couldn't think of number for number two, but that Joan and that mouth, change that.
Well, you know, listening to the audience, I wouldn't change anything about my husband. I love him just the way that he is, because he is totally the opposite of me. He keeps me in check. Trust me, he keeps me in check. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this, you know, before we get ready to wrap up. What have you learned to appreciate about me that you didn't when we first got married?
I would say I appreciate your big, loving, giving heart. I mean, you really care about everything and everybody else. You put them first before yourself, and all in what you do, and all in what you're striving for, and the kids and everything else you do for them. And you take a back seat and stuff like that, and that's a big heart. And you know, you have a big heart, and you mean well what you do.
Oh, thank you, honey. So let me tell you guys, this is funny. So my husband is a security fanatic, right? And I'm telling you, that drives me absolutely crazy. But I have learned to appreciate making sure that I'm off the phone, making sure that the windows are closed, the blinds are closed, the doors are locked, everything is done. He performs this full security check before he comes to bed. But at first it used to drive me crazy, but now I truly appreciate him about that. And not only that, I appreciate that you joined us on this segment tonight, Love, Marriage, and All in Between, and we look forward to you coming back next month at the same time, the same place here at the Brownstone. So once again, thank you for joining me tonight, and we're getting ready to go to a quick commercial break.
No, thank you for having me.
Police brutality.
I enjoyed it.
Not on our watch.
Right.
Whole health care, no sir. Our vote system is broken. It changes when we change it. We rise up as one. We speak out for our black lives. In 2020, we show up to the polls. Your vote is your microphone. So get in the booth and turn yours up. Reclaim your vote. You dig?
Go to BET.com/reclaimyourvote for more on how to register.
Welcome back to the Brownstone, and I am your host, Tracy Brown. I am having a good time. I enjoy that segment tonight, love, marriage, and all in between, because we definitely know that marriage takes work. It takes work from both sides of, from both individuals to get there, to communicate, to accept each other as they are. You can't change them. The only person that can change us is the man above. So I truly appreciate that and look forward to future segments with my husband and a couple of our guests that we're going to have coming on. But tonight we are going to continue this conversation tonight because we understand this is the time of year where many people get depressed. You know, they commit suicide, they turn to drugs and alcohol. So I am excited to tonight to be joined by Sam Underwood as he comes on to share, not only share his story with us, but also to share with us how we can make it through this challenging time. But first, you know, I got to see how he enjoyed the Brownstone. Sam, are you around somewhere? I know you're somewhere in the Brownstone. Are you here? Can you hear me?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Oh, welcome to the Brownstone tonight. How have you enjoyed your visit, your view? What, I don't know what your favorite room was in the Brownstone. Like my husband, I think he said that he was down in the game room. So I don't know what your favorite room was, but I am so excited to have you on the show tonight. So what was
your
favorite
room? I enjoyed the whole Brownstone. So, you know, I think my favorite thing was the game room too, you know. So I enjoyed the show. Very enlightening.
Very enlightening. Thank you so much. And I hope you got an opportunity to listen into that segment about love, marriage, and all in between, because that in-between stuff is where life happens. And that in-between stuff is sometimes where we can understand that the people that we connect with, sometimes when things happen, like the loss of a parent, a loss of a loved one, a loss of a job, things affect how we handle things. And so tonight, you're going to share your story with us and just give us a few tips. So I'm going to sit back, relax, and listen to your story, and you have the floor.
Okay, thank you very much. Like Tracy said, my name is Samuel Underwood, and I'm a recovering addict. I have 21 years on the road of recovery, of sobriety, and it was a challenging role, you know, but through the grace of God, I accomplished this platform to be able to come and speak to you guys and say that I do have 31 years and to be transparent as far as divulging that I am an ex-substance abuser. You know, I put myself in the category of I was like a garbage can. Whoever I was hanging out with, that's what I did. If you pop pills, I pop pills. You shot dope, I shot dope. You drank, I drank. You know, whatever came to the table, you know, I experienced it. And then from that experience, it led me to become a substance abuse counselor. So my title is Certified Recovery Peer Advocate. And what I do with that, I had about a week's worth of training. And then from there, I just come to the clients, the recoveries, and I speak to them basically through my life experience. Because the state has created a modality to saying that people are more open to someone that might have had the same experience as they had. So I fit that criteria, and I'm so grateful that I am able to help someone. You know, it's like each one teach one. Because some days I go outside and I see people just standing on the corner, excuse me, do you got any change? People sleeping in the hallway, sleeping in the parks. And through the grace of God that that's not me. You know, 31 years ago, I was, you know, homeless. You know, I wasn't the type of guy that stood on the corner and begged for money. Always had that entrepreneur spirit inside of me, so I would come up with ways to make money. I sold drugs, I sold clothes, I picked up cans, you name it, I did it, you know, to make that dollar. So what I want to talk about tonight is how sometimes when you don't feel that you have that support system, you know, when things get rough and you need some people to hold you up. I mean, I can identify with that totally. When I was around 16 years old, my mom's was murdered. And my mother comes from a pretty big family. She had like 6 sisters and 4 brothers. So I was like, you know, real excited because one of my aunts could be my surrogate mother, you know, because, I mean, I lost my mom's. And in my head, that's what an auntie is for, to step in when maybe mommy is not there. So my mother was no longer there. But to my heartbreaking experience, my aunts didn't know how to step up and be that surrogate mother to me. So what I did, the alcohol, I drank so much gin, you know, I became an alcoholic. And I was like 16, 17 years old. I drank myself to blackouts sometimes. And how I used to comfort myself sometimes, I was in Georgia, a place called Augusta, Georgia, and my mother was buried in Augusta. I used to go to the cemetery where her body, you know, where her grave was, and I used to go and talk to the tombstone, and I used to get relief from that. So far as going through hard times when you're depressed and things of that nature, I experienced that firsthand. How I worked my way out of that, I mean, it took many years. I drank, I smoked. Nobody really stepped up. And then one day, I went to church. I always had a background of spiritual, and I went to church, and I went to a revival. And, you know, I was running the streets and consider myself a somewhat a tough guy. But that day I was in church, I mean, the spiritual songs that they sung and the love that I experienced in the church, I mean, tears just start flowing down. I was trying to hold them back, but, I mean, believe me, the spirit just came upon me, and, you know, I couldn't control it. So later, a couple of weeks went by late on, and then I just got sick and tired of living that lifestyle of drugging, drinking, passing out, waking up in the morning, don't remember what you've done. I start stealing, hurting people and stuff like that. And when I was going through all of that, I was pushing people away from me. You know, the people that did care about me, I was stealing from them, taking from them. So when I did have a support system or somebody might have believed in me and was going to give me the benefit of the doubt that, yes, his mother passed away, and he's going through some stuff, and he's emotionally, you know, hurt, and he doesn't really know how to handle it. But then I'm abusing their friendships and taking stuff from them. So my support system, they start pushing away from me. So I became by myself alone, you know. And when one day I just got really sick and tired of it, and I was affiliated. One time I had did a crime and I went to hide out in a homeless shelter over there on Ward's Island. And that's where I got so bad. You know, I went in there, and I mean, that's a very depressive place. But what I want to say, if it's really in your heart that you want to change and you want to do something different as far as if you're depressed or, you know, you feel like nobody really cares about you, just reach out to people. You know, I think sometimes the biggest thing that I used to do, I used to make the narcotics, and when I say narcotics, I'm talking about alcohol, drugs, pills, whatever it is that you choose. It could be food. You know, it could be a toxic relationship. Whatever you're doing, you have to remove yourself from that. And it might be uncomfortable sometimes, but that's the only way that you can change. You know, because sometimes I know with me, myself, I seek comfort. And the drugs would give me comfort. So once, I remember it was times I looked at, I needed a haircut, you know, I needed to buy some new clothes, but I would go out and go drink, get drunk or whatever, and I thought I was the most handsomest man, and I ain't go get a haircut or nothing. But those drugs used to tell me that nothing was wrong. I was fine. Everything was good. But then after everything wore off, the depression came back. You know, I never really felt like committing suicide, but I guess me drinking and taking the drugs, I was slowly killing myself, slowly but surely. But I, you know, probably didn't even think that I was hurting myself. You know, I thought I was having a good time. And I know it's coming around Thanksgiving, Christmas is coming up. And the society that we live in, they kind of glorify those holidays as, you know, let's go celebrate, let's go drink, let's go party. But sometimes when you celebrate and you party, you're neglecting some of the emotional things that you should be working on, because it's just like you just putting a Band-Aid on it. And you're not really dealing with the person that's inside of you that was damaged, that made you feel like, you know, I went through some trauma when I was young. I think we all kind of experienced something, but some people are able to bounce back better or quicker than some other people are, and some people never bounce back. They always have to self-medicate themselves. They always have to self-medicate
yourself. Yeah. So I wanted to jump in right quick because I wanted to go back in your story just a little bit. So was the death of your mother what triggered this type of behavior where you said that, you know, whoever you was around, whether it was drinking, smoking, drugging, that's what you did. Was that the trigger that set this ball rolling?
Well, I think from a young age, I was just around people that probably had nothing really good to do when we were young. So we were very curious about different smoking weed and things of that nature. And it was just easy and accessible to fall into that trap. So when my mother passed away, the door was already open. I just opened it a lot wider.
So where was, did you have siblings? Where were your siblings during this time, or are you an only child?
Well, I'm the oldest, and my sister is like 3 years younger than me. So, you know, she was down south, and, you know, she had moved down south maybe 5 years before my mother passed away, and they didn't really have a really good relationship. You know, she was becoming a young woman, and my mother was, like, putting down rules on her. So they bumped heads. So my mother said that it would be better for her to go live down south with my grandparents.
Okay. So was – and I know we talked about how the death of your mom probably triggered this, but is there a history of – alcoholism or pills or anything in your, you know, family, you know, on your father's side, your mother's side, is there a history of that?
Well, my mom's was a drinker. My dad was a drinker. All my aunts and my uncles, they drank, they smoked. you know, they you know, to this day, I got people in my family, they, you know, they're in the lifestyle, you know, of the drug trade. So it's there, you know, it's that addictive personality, I guess, is a part of my family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then you said this one key thing that I love. You said one day, that good old one day, because we know that it takes just one time. You walked into the church and that you felt the love. I guess you felt the peace that you didn't feel out on the street. And then you said you couldn't control the tears from coming down. And you knew at that point that you had to change, that something in your life had to change. So let me ask you, because a lot of times we feel those emotions, we go in, we do that, and we do nothing. But what caused you to say, I'm really going to do something, and I'm going to stick to it, and I'm not going to turn back to the right or to the left. I'm going to move ahead to make myself a better person.
Well, I had, I'm a type of a guy that my word was my bond. That's how I grew up. If I gave you my word, I would stick to it, you know, and if I couldn't stick to it, I would give you a reason why. So you wouldn't be curious. But being in the world of drugs, I started stealing. People would give me packages or trusted me to go to the store. I would just run off with the money and, you know, I'd start becoming a person that I didn't want to become. I was getting jumped and beat up and I didn't really like that, because that's not the foundation that I grew up in. You know, I grew up in a middle-class family, and my mother and my father, they both was workers, and I didn't grow up in a drug environment. But when my mother passed away, I became a part of a drug environment because I came into this family that's what they did in their family.
Mm-hmm. And so you talked about a support system. So, and I know that's probably one of the key ways that you made it through this ordeal. And congratulations on being clean, free, and sober for 31 years. That is an awesome testimony in itself. When we began, we found ourselves in that predicament, in that state. What type of support system should we be looking for? Because sometimes we can just get around the wrong folks.
Yeah, well, I'm saying, I think we all know right from wrong. I don't care how old you are, you know what's right and what's wrong. And if you start getting that feeling in your stomach, in your gut, and it's telling you that, yo, this is not right, then you need to move on. Because I remember I was listening to T.D. Jakes one day, and he said, you know how you know when you change? When you do something that you've been doing for a long time and it starts bothering you, that's how you know when your life is changing. So when you start looking for that change, like, yo, I'm tired of this, and you start seeking it, the Father that I know, and I call him God, he starts putting people in your life or things in your life that starts pushing you towards that goal that you're trying to accomplish. And sometimes it's easier for others, and sometimes it's a lot harder. But if you stay on that path, it is success at the end of the road.
Mm-hmm. So if you had to give, because we are coming up on the holidays now, and you had to give some advice to someone that was struggling, where this was a hard time of the year, if I'm sitting on the other side of the window looking in and I wanted to reach out and to help, what are some of the trigger signs that I should be looking for? So maybe somebody, because, you know, we don't all say, hey, I'm getting ready to go do some pills. I'm getting ready to drink. I feel like killing myself, mm-hmm. you know. But what are some of the signs that I can look for so I may help someone else?
When you start neglecting responsibilities, if you start lagging in your relationships, people start lying. When someone that used to be consistent, and then you start mm-hmm. seeing the inconsistencies, I think that's a sign of something is not going right. Sometimes it's the way a person might dress. You know, if they, like, dress really neat and stuff like that, all of a sudden, you know, you start seeing them, their clothes is kind of wrinkles, and, you know, what's going on? You know, they don't get their hair done like they might have used to, you know, stuff like that. Or they waking up looking like, you know, they didn't wash their face or whatever. They start being late, you know, to appointments. It's all little signs like that. Or just being really angry or for, you know, no apparent reason. Like, you know, why are they spazzing out like that?
Those are some good points, because a lot of times, you know, we see these things, and like you say, we may gloss over them because we may see them one day, and for 2 days they fine. But we missed the opportunity when, before those 2 days came, 5 days they were inconsistent in their personality and how they act and the things that they do. They were, you know, inconsistent. So when we see someone like that, and, you know, being who should we contact? Who should we reach out to? Because for me, I'm not able. I don't have those. That's not my skill set. So what are some of the things that I can do to get the person to where they need to go so that they can get the help as needed?
Places that they can detox, pick up centers. Right now, they have Zoom meetings for like NAAA, Smart Recovery. They have like 24-hour Zoom calls, AA calls that people can reach out to. I also work for an agency, Emma Bowen, on 145th Street in Amsterdam. It's an outpatient program. You can come. We enroll you, and we'll start the process. They give out medical assistance to help you with Suboxone, Vivitrol, you know, stuff like that to help you with some of the triggers that you might be experiencing. And you can also have a counselor and a peer like me that will follow up and to be somewhat of a support system that you might need. But Tracy, the key is that you have to want to do it yourself.
Right.
It's an old saying that you could lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
So you saying they got to be tired, sick and tired, or sick and tired, similar to where you were, saying, I want this change for me before anyone's going to change.
I'm not going to say sick and tired and sick and tired, but at least, you know, come and find out about it. You know, because sometimes, mm-hmm. I mean, I talk to people and they go through relapse and they drink again or they get high again off a crack or whatever, but it's a process. So as long as you're reaching out, you know, you're seeking help. You know what I'm saying? It's a process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is a process. And I find that a part of many of the people that I am aware of that had had, you know, a challenging time with drug, alcohol, and all that, the faith, your faith, a relationship with God was also key point to their recovery. Having that
yes,
person
ma'am.
There, such as yourself, where you say your accountability partner, I guess that's what you call them, your accountability
yes.
partner, when you felt like
mm-hmm.
you were getting ready to relapse, you pick up the phone and you do what you had to do to say, hey, I'm about to go down the drain. Hey, this happened in my life. Having those family members, those friends around that understand what you went through, you know, and that love you for who you are and also going to hold you accountable besides your coach. Those are some key things. But like I said, the most part that I mean, I love your story, but the part about walking into that church is something about the church that in that moment that God will show up and show you that there's a better way. So for anybody that does not have hope, you know, you heard it today from Sam Underwood that he's been recovered for 31 years. That's a long time. And I'm quite sure
yes.
there are days that were not easy. There were days
no,
that
ma'am.
You struggled, but you still
yes.
gave it to remember how far you came from to be there. And I you know, I want to thank you for being on the show tonight, but I want you to tell us a little bit about SAM Connections.
Well, SAM's Connection is connections that will change your life. Like I said earlier, in my heart, I'm an entrepreneur. So I'm always out there networking, trying to put people with other businesses and just to create connections that might possibly change their lives. You know, I know people that do loans for businesses. I know people that do real estate. If you're looking for a house, I myself do merchant services. That's with the credit card processing. So, you know, I have all types of people that I'm connected with that I can connect someone else to that possibly can help them with a connection that might change their life.
Well, that's great. So can you tell us how we can get in contact with you?
Yes. My phone number is 917-659-7752. Once again, 917-659-7752. And my email is samuelunderwood6@gmail.com. That's samuelunderwood6@gmail.com. No spaces or anything. It's all one word. No underscore, none of that.
Well, we want to thank you for joining us on the show tonight. It has been a great time, a great eye-opener for myself, and just letting me know that, and letting our listening audience know that they, too, if they're struggling with anything and they're, you know, they just don't know what to do, that there is opportunities and there are resources out there available to help them make it through this challenging time. Because, like we said, the holidays are about to kick off. And like you said, it could be food. That's one of the things that I heard you said, that it could be, we talk about drugs and alcohol and all of this stuff, but it could be food. You don't realize that when the holiday time comes, you know, something triggers in you, you know, because maybe you lost a loved one around that time. Maybe, you know, something happened around that time and you relate to food. It may not be, you know, and that could be bad too, because, you know, eating the wrong food messes up your health. But that could be one of the things too. So I thank you for absolutely sharing your story with us. I'm hoping to have you back on the show, especially when we talk about love, marriage, and all in between. Did you get an opportunity to listen to that segment?
Yeah, I caught it a little bit. I was on another training with my job, so I was kind of like going back and forth. If you offered me $1,000 to say exactly what y'all said, I would have to pass.
You would have to pass on that one. Okay.
Well, yes,
we had a good time. You know, we talk about love, marriage, and all in between, because that's what it's all about. Life happens in between all those things, and it could deal with just the topic that we talked about tonight, substance abuse, the loss of a loved one that triggers us to go into this spiral downfall, and that how important it is that we need our family and our friends and our faith, our church family, our family, and everybody to help us through those challenging times. So once again, I thank you for coming on the Brownstone, and have a great evening. We're going to get ready to go to a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
All right.
Black women have always been on the front lines for social justice.
It's what we do.
We organize, make phone calls,
and yes,
we run for office.
All while being fly.
We stand up,
stand up to systemic racism,
fight for health care
and justice
for all
our citizens,
and use our power,
our rights,
our responsibility. Black women,
let's vote.
Vote, vote. For Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
Your turn, fellas.
Okay.
Okay.
We got this.
Fellas.
Brothers.
We've heard our sisters,
our mothers, our wives and daughters cry out for equality.
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 All across this country. And now it's our turn.
Our responsibility to take our power back.
Black women vote more than black men.
And it's time we change that.
Don't give your power away.
Every single vote counts in this election.
Show up.
Show out.
And vote
for Joe Biden
and Kamala Harris.
That's right. That's right. We want to make sure, and we are going to keep talking about it until it's election day. Show up, cast your vote, make a difference, because our ancestors have fought for us. No, make no difference. We're not telling you who to vote for. We're just telling you to vote, because your voice matters and your vote counts. And so tonight, I just simply want to thank all of my guests for coming out and joining me here at the Brownstone, as well as the listeners for joining in on the conversation. I want to take this time to invite you to follow the Voices of Hope on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And remember to take a moment to follow me on the Brownstone on the Facebook page. And once again, until next week, I truly want you to hope that you have a wonderful week and you join me next week right here on the Brownstone.